from the hills. I mean, some of them haven't worn boots before, you see.
I'll stop you just there. Geoffrey Probyn, end of reel one. Geoffrey Probyn, reel two.
Yes, well, and I mean, in a way, the very new recruits, you looked upon them as children, really, you know, or young sons. Mm. You felt ever so responsible for them, but it was a huge change for them.
Yeah. How young were they when they came?
Well, I mean, not that I can clear, some of them said that, I suppose they were 16 or so, but I noticed. For example, in Italy, there was a grave of a rifleman who died at 16. Well, he must have joined up at 14 or something. Mm.
Yeah. So of course, they would just tell you how old they were.
He would look, and if they fit and pass, you know. So, anyway, so that's, so they're really ever so responsible for them.
Yeah. So what sort of training were you doing? What sort of, what did you know about what?
Well, the training we did, they obviously had to do marching, rifle drill, shooting, bend guns and things, and then some of the more experienced ones would move on to firing mortars and that sort of thing. And they'd do tactics like platoon in attack, and then the better ones would become, well, we call them lance knights, but the lance corporal, and corporals and the sergeant, but they had different ranks by name, but that's what they were.
Yes.
And Lance Nike and Nike, and Havildar was the sergeant. Yes.
So
and
you were leading a platoon, were you?
Well, you. Yes, I suppose. We're still in the depot now because you're not so. You were probably with him, I can't remember now. I think more or less a company, really.
Right.
But you might have more than one British officer attached. Uh-huh. There might be two of you or three of you.
Right.
But you do platoon tactics, and they do section tactics. And after a while, then the more experienced ones, of course, they would learn to command their units. And then you had the help of these Jemadars and Subadars who were really well-experienced people.
What was the standard of competence compared to the British Army?
Well, when they're trained and ready, I mean, very, very good. It was, but having said that, a good British unit is good. There's no one thing, discipline is the thing. And esprit de corps. Now, discipline was easy with the Gurkhas because they wanted to. Oh, you get one or two bad apples, not many. They wanted to do it. I mean, in the war, one was always pleased if you're fighting, who's on your right or your left? And if it was a guards unit or one of the riflemen's, units had reputations, you felt happy. If it wasn't, you think, oh, go on, one. But so, but they make very good soldiers. Because they are mountain people, they can run up and down mountains like nobody's business, and they're very good in the jungle. And it's a surprise to me where the armed forces are so short, why they disbanded so many Gurkhas who wanted to serve, and there are plenty there now. You could raise a few battalions and have them. But there we are.
What's the social life like at the depot?
Oh, well, that was quite good, especially when we were in Assam. In fact, it was the old days, the British Raj, you had to have cards printed and sent round to the leading families. Then they invite you to dinner. And there would be a club there, and then they'd have a dance on a Saturday night. So that was,
so it was a good social life.
That was a good social life.
Yeah, and were junior officers in demand, you know, for the daughters and
that sort of thing? Well, yes, if they had daughters, yes. Oh, yes, it was a good social life.
Yeah. So did all the officers sort of integrate socially? I mean, it was, or as a junior, were you?
Oh, no, they're in the mess. They're pretty good. They're not, you know, within reason, of course, but.
Did you have a personal servant?
Oh, yes. Now, in the depot, he wasn't a Gurkha. We call a bearer. But they're usually ex-military. I had an Indian chap who was an ex-Dogra, which is a group of Indians, and served in the Dogra. But he'd be an elderly man, probably in his 60s, you know, and they look after you very well. But when you get to the battalion, you have an orderly who is a Gurkha.
Yeah. So how long were you at the depot?
I would think I was there nearly a year. Well, including a SAM. And then I went off on courses. I went off on a mortar course.
Oh, did you? Yes. Yeah. What sort of mortars were you?
Well, these were, I think, 3-inch mortars, a place called Sorga. And I remember it so well because the equipment was pretty poor. And, do you know a Bren gun carrier?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, you were supposed to have that to carry your mortar. Well, they didn't have that. We had 2 bullocks and a cart to carry your mortar. And at the end of the course, we had to go on an exercise and you went somewhere and then you fired and all that. Well, all these bullocks set off. Unfortunately, mine, one bullock wouldn't work. So the cart went round and round and round. And I arrived late and had everyone watching me as I got my mortars going. And so I remember the course at Sorga, right?
So how long was that course?
Probably a month or something.
And were there people from various
regiments? Oh, various regiments, yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember any of the instructors?
I don't really, no. Yeah. No.
So, what are there any other courses you did?
I did a gas course, but that was later on. That was when we were in Egypt and went up into Palestine.
Right. Okay. We'll come to that.
Yes.
Later, yeah. So, after a year with the Gurkhas,
yes, well,
fairly at home there.
Well, I was at home. I could speak the language well. And then I was posted to a battalion in Egypt.
Oh, right. Which battalion?
The 2nd battalion.
Right. So what did you feel about that?
Well, that was a good experience. Now, going to join the battalion, I was put in charge of some Indian troops on a French boat. Was like a cargo ship, really. So we sailed from India to somewhere near Cairo way. And they were good chaps, and I think I still got a card from their jemadar. And, of course, we were responsible for keeping your deck area clean, and we used to do quite well on that. And they were nice, good chaps. And then when I got there, I went to join the regiment. And
so what was that like then?
Joining the regiment?
Yes.
Oh, that was great. You felt, now I've arrived and this is for the business.
So what was going on in the war? What sort of data we got?
I think we around about El Alamein, I think.
Right. Before?
Just before.
Just before, right. So arriving in Egypt, where did you actually meet up
a place, they're in camp at a place called Mina, mm-hmm. near the pyramids.
And was the battalion very different from or was it different in any way from
the depot?
The depot really?
Well, I suppose it was really. It was, yes, I think it was.
Had they seen action?
The actual battalion had originally been put in the bag at Tobruk, and it was now being reformed. And some of them had seen action or been drafted from other battalions.
So lots of new people coming.
Lots of new people. No, no, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So the camp at
Mina.
How big was it?
Oh, only tents and things. Yeah. I suppose in a battalion you're about 700 men, I suppose.
And who was the battalion commander?
He was a chap called Brearley. And he was an old man, he was 40 odd. We thought, dear, dear, still. And he used to say, which is rather silly of him, that he was senior to Montgomery. I would have kept quiet, quite frankly.
So Monty probably, I don't know what age Monty was, but was he maybe
I think this chap, Monty, well, I think in the army list, you know, probably when they joined up or something like that. I'm not seen in rank, he's a lieutenant colonel, this chap.
Yeah.
Might have.
What did you know about Montgomery? What did you did you know of his reputation?
Well, not until he arrived, and then there were all sorts of tales going on. Yes. Oh, yes. He insisted on people doing PT in the morning, and, oh, yes, getting on with things. Mm. Yes. He was a breath of fresh air, really.
Yeah. Mm. So how long were you at Mina?
About a couple of months, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting there, because I met... There were other troops around, like South Africans and New Zealanders. And that was nice, for meeting them.
So, what did you think of them? Because they've all got sort of different reputations.
Yes.
And characteristics.
The New Zealanders, because I'll tell you about them later on, because we fought with them, first class. South Africans quite good. I didn't fight with them, so I can't say, but I obviously only made friends with those that, you know, having a drink in the bar that you liked, really. But there, of course, there we used to go into Cairo from Mina, nights out, you know. And I can remember one night out, there was a club, I think it was called the Royal, and when you approached it, there were little lights in all the trees. And we were there having a drink, and some champagne was sent over, and King Farouk was on one of the other tables.
Really?
And the other thing they have is a lovely sporting club called the Gezira Sporting Club. And when I was there, I saw the Australian division play the New Zealand division. And I've still got the scorecard, and some of them...
What was that they were playing?
Cricket, sorry, yes. And this is a very posh sporting club. And... because we had access to it, and there's that cricket match, and Cairo was quite a place.
Yeah, I imagine it was
Full
of troops.
Oh, yes, and when Rommel was thought to be bursting through, they were all getting ready for the jippos to welcome him. Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're born sort of
trading. Yes.
What did you think of the Egyptians?
Well, not an awful lot, quite honestly.
They're
mixed, yes. Other
British, other ranks. Than
well, they, yes. There. Well, they could have done. I can imagine when they get drunk, they would be. Which is, I mean, some of these equipment of football hooligans, I can understand the Egyptians being peeved, yes. Really. Yeah. Not very nice for them. I mean, they were virtually occupied, weren't they?
Yeah. King Farouk was looking kindly on.
Well, he didn't know that we were Gurkhas. Right. You know, we were just British officers. Yeah.
Was there anything that would characterise a British officer in the Gurkhas or an Indian regiment? You know,
We've chosen to do it, and everyone should be proud of their own regiment, a sort of esprit de corps, and.
But yeah, I wonder what it is about someone that makes them want to join foreign in the
common regiment. Well, I suppose it's their reputation and the experience travel, and the travel and all that sort of thing. Mm.
So you were in Mina and
Cairo? Yes, a little while. And in the evenings when we went on any duty, you could get out and have a party if you'd go into Egypt, into Cairo.
So the living was quite comfortable there then?
Yes, but you were in a tent, mind you.
Yes.
It's not.
Yeah.
I'm living in a tent, but.
So you were training for action. Did you know what sort of action it was going to be?
No.
What your role
was? No. Except that we knew we were infantry.
Right. Yeah. But you had no idea
of where the push might be. And then we got. Actually, we were sent up. We sent up to Palestine.
Right. Whereabouts?
Well, that I can't remember, quite honestly.
Okay.
And that's
what
when
was
I...
What was going on there at that time?
In Palestine? Well, there had been trouble with the immigrants, Jewish immigrants, but I found them quite friendly. It had more or less died down. The Palestine police force were keeping an eye on things. And there we would carried on training. And that's when I went on a gas course. And they were, and that was their Americans and various regiments, you know.
Yeah. And what was in on that course? What were you taught?
Well, how to deal, you know, they had chambers you had to go through with your mess pass on and things like that. Mainly said you will go back to the regiment and tell them how to use their gas masks and the like. And then they seem to, I can't remember where in Palestine. And then I went up, had a weekend leave in Jerusalem. And there I made friends with a South African, a New Zealander, and a British chap. Four from the four different armies we were, and had a weekend there, which was nice. And then, of course, we were doing exercises and all this running about PT for old Montgomery and about then. And then we were sent up into Syria. Because I think they were afraid the Germans might come through Turkey or somewhere. But there's more exercises. And then we went to the Lebanon.
And what were your duties in Syria? Did you have...
Well, we were patrolling, and there used to be a train, it seems hard to believe, it used to come through, more or less from Germany, come through part of Syria and go on somewhere else. And it was, we stopped, and we used to provide the sort of guard. But the Syrians, and I suppose probably some of our intelligence people, would go through the train checking, a bit like a film, checking all the passports and things. And there was a wonderful chap up there called Baker, but he was only half British. Oh, he was more British than the British. A wonderful flag and everything, and posted up as his little house way out. I think he was partly in, had something to do with this rail checking, too. And we did our exercises, you know.
What sort of exercises?
So when I say exercise, I'm talking about sort of like attacking a hill or defending something or moving at night and that sort of thing, yes.
So you were getting quite trained up now.
Oh, yes, yes.
Did you feel ready for action?
Oh, yes. And then we went to the Lebanon and we were selected to go to the mountain... or start a mountain warfare school. And we were to have skis, and we had to do rock climbing, you know, the ropes, did all that. And then we were issued with skis, and you know, the Cedars of Lebanon, of biblical, the mountain warfare school was there. And it's really, because I learnt since, Churchill wanted us to go up from Italy through the Alps into Austria, really to head off the Russians,
yes.
So they could, yeah. And we were being trained for that.
So who was doing the training?
Oh, they had, they had chaps, ski instructors, rock climbing instructors. Some of them were sort of Austrian or ex-Austrians, though they were on the other side, yeah. Naturalised. Oh, and so absolute fanatics they were, yeah. Wonderful characters.
How did you get on with them, and with your skiing and...
Well, we didn't get the skiing, but we did the mountain climbing, which I won't say I was, you know, it's not the sort of thing I'd do on a weekend, really, but one had to do it, and one had to go around about the mountains with a sort of heavy pack and compass bearings and night and all that sort of thing. Got disgustingly fit, and then we were ready for the skiing, but the snows were late, and then they called us back to rejoin the 4th Indian Division.
Where was that?
That was in Italy.
Right. So you went from the Lebanon?
From the Lebanon. Well, I must say that there was there was a dodgy thing in the Lebanon. The Vichy French had been there, and they weren't over friendly. And there had been, before we went there, a battle between the Australians and the Vichy French. And we were supposed to go. And we were all kitted up and ready and tactical exercise to invade an island. I think it was, there's Leros, Kos, and another one. I've forgotten their names. We were supposed to land there, and the landing ships came, and there was trouble with the French, and we had all our gear had gone, and we were supposed to get ready to fight them, but the coup was over, and then they called it all off, which was just as well, because I can remember I was supposed to land with several Bren gun carriers towing anti-tank guns, which were funny little things, and occupy a important crossroads on this island. Well, it had been hopeless. Anyway, so that was called off, and we were then went to join the 4th Indian Division. That was the 10th Division, 4th Indian Division in Italy.
And so how did you travel from the Lebanon
originally? Well, we came back down through Palestine, and as it was then, and must have been about somewhere, and went over and went to Taranto.
And what was happening, in the Italian campaign when you went to Taranto?
Well, obviously they got Sicily, and they were moving up, but it was very slow business. Very slow business. And we went in the line, and I can't remember the name of the place. I can remember. We slogged away. The weather was atrocious. And it's a wonderful country for defending. And especially if you've been there when no one else is there, you can prepare everything. You don't prepare it under fire and things. And then we were moved across to Monte Cassino.
Right. So just sticking with your arrival at the moment, what had you as a junior officer, how had you been briefed about what was going on and what your role would be?
Well, you're briefed really for the particular job that you're going to do. You can't sort of brief generally.
No.
And we went into the front up there, I think maybe in Lasciano, I don't know. We went into the front up there, which was relatively quiet. And
what sort of positions did you have? Were you taking over positions from someone else?
No, at that stage, and I think it was rolling up, and then we stopped. And in the winter, we'd be on a ridge here. There'd be a big valley and a river, and the Germans be on that ridge there. Mm-hmm.
So what were you told your job would be?
Our job was to wait ready to stop the Germans counterattacking back. And wait for the order to advance again.
What time of year was this?
This must have been sort of January, February, I think. Yes.
What special equipment had you been given for the weather? Because you'd come from...
Nothing special. We had ordinary battle dress, not the summer stuff, which is usually shorts and shirts and things. Yeah. So that was relatively quiet. A bit of activity going on.
So when you first commanded your men under fire, what was that like?
Well, I suppose you obviously felt responsible, and you hoped that you'd got them in the right position, and that they, everything was ready, and they'd hold out. But so we really got experience without being blooded sort of thing badly. A few casualties, but nothing really bad. And then we were called over to Cassino, and that's we went by lorries at night, and that is a nightmare because one lorry follows another, and you're always worried that someone might be in the convoy that's going somewhere else, and they weren't allowed lights. Well, they had really tiny lights. Anyway, we eventually arrived. We knew it was somewhere near Cassino, and we all debussed, and we just sort of sat on the edge of the road, and there were all these flashes going on up the top.
We thought,
my God, what's all this? And then we were moved up to take over from the Americans.
What sort of position was that? Do you know whereabouts?
Yes, it was just one side of the monastery, right up by the Well, not right, bad side. And, but all at night, you see, all dark, you didn't really know what was happening. And then the Americans went, and you found that, of course, daylight, you couldn't really move around. You peek, and then night time, you go around and see that your chaps were all well and in position.
So was this not in their village or anything?
No, just on the side of a hill.
What sort of cover did you have?
Very little. There was a stone wall, perhaps about that high, and the Americans said, of course, you couldn't really dig because it's rock, but you move stuff out, and they build up what in the Indian Army used to call sangars, which on the northwest frontier they used to, before the war fight, you built up a little place for it. But you soon realised that you just couldn't move in the daylight, because they're up there. They see everything. And so all your rations and ammunition had to come up, partly by mules, and then carried. Now, of course, Gurkhas in their own villages, they carry huge weights, bands from their heads down. So carrying an ammunition box, sort of, I mean, it's hard work, but they were used to that. They could do that quite well.
How did the men react to sort of going into this position where you were effectively pinned down?
Well, they're fairly philosophical. I mean, I'd say they liked it. And sometimes, 1 week, we only got food twice. But the Americans and left a lot of tinned food. But I think some of it was ham, which, of course, Gurkhas are Hindus, they shouldn't. But they ate it.
You get hungry enough.
Yes. There we were, snowed and it rained, you were wet and uncomfortable.
Did you not feel very sort of impotent? I mean, what could infantry do against these guns up on the...
Well, the infantry, eventually, you've got to take... Well, I suppose ours was to try and stop the Germans advancing our way back, you know. And eventually, ready to advance, you've got to... You can shell someone, but you've got to take it with people. It's like now they talk about... And you can't win a war by air. You can soften people up, but people have got to go on the ground and take it. And...
Did you take casualties while you were
stationary? Oh, yes. If anyone moved in the daylight, they had snipers, they'd get you. And also, of course, with the shelling, not only do you get the bits of fragments of shell, but fragments of rock. Mm. It multiplies it. And to be killed by a fragment of rock, moving off, you see.
Geoffrey Probin, End of Reel 2.